You're listening to the Mid-Career GPS Podcast, episode 127.
My favorite emotion is resentment. It guides a large portion of the decisions in my life.
Who or what do you resent? Do you find yourself being short-fused or easily angered over things? Many mid-career professionals find themselves stuck in this mega sandwich where they're trying to grow their careers, care for their families, care for their aging parents, and yes, care for themselves. Whatever your situation, things are stressing you out, but do those things cause you to burn out? Today, you will meet Kate Dunovan. Kate is a keynote speaker, one of New York City's leading burnout experts, the host of Fried, the Burnout Podcast, author of the book, The Bounce Back Ability Factor, and an acupuncturist with a master's degree in Chinese medicine. Her creative burnout recovery solutions have been featured on podcasts and online magazines such as Forbes, NPR, and the New York Post, as well as companies such as Lululemon and PepsiCo. In this episode, you'll learn how to identify when you are burned out, how it affects your career, and some tips to help you deal with it. And it's nothing to be ashamed of. This is the Mid-Career GPS Podcast, and I'm your host, John Nerrell. I help mid-career professionals who feel stuck, undervalued, and underutilized show up to find a job they love or love the job they have using my proven four-step formula. It's time to start building your mid-career GPS. Let's get started. Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the podcast. If you are currently preparing for your next interview, I want you to know that how well you tell your story is everything. It helps you clearly communicate your value, build a better relationship with the hiring manager, and increases your confidence as you interview them as much as they interview you. I have a new guide called 26 Sentence Starters to help you answer any interview question. You can learn more about it on my homepage at johnnerrell.com, and you can check the show notes as well. This 40-page guide will help you craft your answers to 5 interview question categories and fine-tune your messaging as you interview for that job you'll love. Visit johnnerrell.com for more information on how to purchase 26 Sentence Starters to help you answer any interview question. Now, I admire today's guest very much. I became a huge fan after hearing her speak at Next Up's Rising Stars Conference last summer. Kate commanded the stage with her welcoming yet powerful presence to hold space for hundreds of people as she talked about burnout and its impact on our lives, ourselves, our loved ones, leadership, and our careers. As you listen to this episode, you will notice some longer pauses. When we recorded our conversation, we felt it important to hold that space for ourselves and you as you listen to what we shared about our personal stories and experiences with burnout in hopes that you can relate and know you are seen. It gives me great pleasure to introduce you to Kate Dunovan.
Hi, I'm Kate Dunovan, burnout coach, speaker, author, and podcaster of Fried the Burnout Podcast.
Kate, I am so excited to have you here today and for us to have this conversation. One of the things I love doing with my guests, though, is getting to know them a little bit. And so as we get started, would you share with us what you wanted to be growing up?
I told my grandmother when I was 3 years old that I was going to be a doctor. I had always planned on being in the medical field, always planned on being a doctor.
What kind of doctor?
I didn't know. It was just being a doctor at that point in my life. And so I, you know, went through school, did high school, did all the science classes that I needed to, graduated 12 out of 600 kids, got a scholarship, went to Boston University, and quit.
What happened there?
Yeah. So I didn't realize when I was saying it growing up that my desire to be a doctor was smashed up into two different things. One of them was really wanting to help people. And the other one was being respected for being smart. Mm. Being smart was the thing that I was praised for my whole life. So I thought that I had to do something to prove that. So if I had that level of degree, then that would be sort of like stamping the, like, she's officially smart. And that was my biggest thing, I thought, at the time. And so I started Boston University. I was doing a minor in Eastern religion. At the time, my major was biology on a pre-med track. I was doing a minor in Eastern religion, and I was taking a class with a woman named Livia Cohn, who's the world's foremost scholar of Taoism. Mm. And I went into her office hours one day and I said, Livia, I can't do this. I'm from a very low income city, low income family. I'm going to graduate school with $300,000 in debt, and then I'm going to have to do residency. And then I just don't understand how I'm supposed to survive this. I'm not even going to be working until I'm like over 30. And then I'm going to have all this. I just don't, this is too big to me. I don't know how to do this. I don't want this anymore, but I've always wanted to be a doctor and I don't know what to do. She said, well, do Chinese medicine. I said, what the F is that?
And she said,
here's some books, here's some information, go read about it. My roommate at the time had gotten me some books for Christmas, was about Chinese medicine too. And I just started reading and I was like, why does this make the whole world make more sense? I was like a neophyte in a new religion. Mm. I was a convert immediately. I was like, whoa, I went to acupuncture school. I left BU. I did my first 2 years at BU, and master's program are 4 years in the United States. And it's 4 years that ends with a master's degree. So you have to have at least 2 years done before you start so that you have 6 years total. I moved from Boston to San Diego to do a master's degree in a medicine that I had never experienced. I was 20 years old.
Okay. So lots of things there about risk taking and being bold and going after what it is that you want. What was your mindset like that during that time where you, to your point, said, I don't want to take on all of this debt, but found a way to honor that inner value about you helping and taking care of people?
I got to honor both of the values also, because I was finishing with a master's degree. So while it wasn't an MD, it was still a significant degree. And that was important to me at the time. It was one of the reasons I chose it. I could have become a massage therapist, but that was a 3-month program that ended in a certificate. And that wasn't good enough for me. Mm-hmm. I think it's good enough now. Amen to massage therapists. Like,
of course,
There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong. But I needed at the time, I still needed that. And so my mindset at the time was like I don't even know if it was a mindset. It was like a heart set. It was like everything just burst open inside of me and said, I can still do this thing that I want to do in a way that I actually think might be even more beneficial for people. Because as acupuncturists, we're often seeing people who are sort of phasing out of the medical system. The medical system can't help them in some way, shape, or form, and they're lost unless they can lean on people like us. And so I get to help the people that fall through the cracks. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. To that point, there is so much about the helping energy and the giving energy that a lot of the people who listen to this podcast can find themselves in.
Yeah.
I shared with you before we actually started recording this episode that given over 100 episodes of this podcast, this is one topic that I have not addressed. Mm. And that is about what burnout is and what it means and how it impacts us as professionals. And I want to share this story with you real quickly, because when I think about burnout, this is the story that comes to mind. I was very blessed later on in my life that I reconnected with my favorite high school teacher. I bumped into Pat one day in town. We lived in neighboring towns where I grew up in New Jersey. And keep the story relatively short here. We adopted each other as godparent and godchild. She was my high school religion teacher. So I always called her godmama. And as she got older and her life partner got sick with ovarian cancer, she was taking care of her, and family drama and problems and taking care of it. I remember I reached out to her one day and she responded and she said, "John, I can't. I don't have it in me." And she said, "Caregiver syndrome is real." I'm curious, when you hear that, what comes up for you?
Well, the first thing that comes up, two things happened physically. First, my entire body was covered in goosebumps. Second, tears came up. Mm-hmm. So my first two things are physical reactions. I do burnout work because this breaks my heart.
Yeah.
And when I'm in it, when I'm talking about it, I make it funny. I mean, you've seen me on stage.
Yes.
And so when I'm up there, I am not making it a heavy topic. We are laughing. We are moving together. We can talk about this in ways that makes it enjoyable, sparks some reconsiderations, some mindset shifts, and we can move on and all be a little bit stronger and a little bit better together. But when we get to the bottom, underneath it all, I was at a workshop in Florida at the beginning of 2022, and somebody was asking us to go over our marketing messages again. If you are an entrepreneur, you've gone over your marketing messages and you've done your, ideal client avatar, and you've done this 400 times because in the first year you do it 87 times a day. Basically, you're constantly looking for, who am I talking to? What is my message? And so I feel like we're doing this big exercise as a group. And I'm thinking to myself, I've done this so many times. I know what my message is. And then I was like, okay, fine. I'm just going to beginner mind. I'm just going to let myself do this and see what happens. And so I start doing it and I write burnout because that's my thing, and I keep going. And then I stopped. And I got to a word that I have talked about for years and never really said. But what the thing that breaks my heart really, the underneath of all of this, is self-neglect.
Oh,
I know. That's what happened to me too.
Yeah. Yeah. You said that word. And I felt that rush.
Right.
Right. Because I've been guilty of it.
I mean, haven't we all?
We've all been guilty of it, right? Yeah.
Haven't we all? And so when I started to realize that, it shifted the way I was speaking to people a little bit, because the burnout research that we read, it will tell you that 80% of burnout is the company's fault. The reason that research never sat well with me is because it's only done in hospitals and corporate settings. I burnt out as an entrepreneur doing a job that, if you listen to my voice talking about acupuncture a few minutes ago, I love that medicine. There's no mistaking it. So I did a job. I followed my passion. I did a job. I was successful at it. I made plenty of money. I had a lot of patients. I had respect in my community. I was helping people, and I still burnt out. And I wasn't working for anyone else. So that set of rules that creates burnout in the normal working world didn't apply to me. And I thought, well, then what the heck is going on here? And you dig deep enough, and that's what it comes down to. I was abandoning myself on a regular basis for the perceived benefit of others.
when I heard you speak in June, one of the things I truly admired about how you held space for everyone in the room was that you could talk about this topic and you could move people in a way where there was a lot of opportunities for introspection and self-reflection and what that meant. And you could bring us to that place and then shift it in a way to get us to laugh and lighten up the room. You are one of those rare speakers that can take a heavy topic and still have a lightness in the room to get your point across. That is a gift that you have as a talented speaker and clinician and expert. I do want to call up something from your book, The Bounce Back Ability Factor, and Burnout, Gain Resilience, and Change the World. And it's this quote that stood out for me in your book. And I'm going to read it back to you and would love your thoughts on what comes up for you as I read this.
Okay, I'm going to close my eyes and listen.
Okay. Burnout is the state of being that affects physical, emotional, and mental well-being. It is the extreme that occurs when stress is chronic enough to cause changes to the structure of the brain, your ability to digest, your heart rate, and more, making you less able to handle further stress and more inclined to serve physical and emotional symptoms that are a result of said stress. In super simple terms, burnout is the result of chronic stress that changes your ability to handle day-to-day life with ease.
Sometimes when people read things back to me, I think, wow, that was a really good sentence. Did I write that?
That's gold, my friend.
Did I write that? This is really interesting because I moved back to the United States. I decided to go back to school. I'm getting another degree. It's a bachelor's degree. It's in biobehavioral health, which is basically, in very short terms, the Western version of Chinese medicine. It's a holistic view: biology, sociology, neurology, epidemiology, genetics, environment, all of it smashed into one. It's fascinating. It's amazing. I love it. And just this week, actually yesterday, one of my assignments was to come up with a definition of health. And they gave us definitions to work from. We were supposed to choose the one that worked best for us. And of course, I hated all of them. And so
of course you did.
Of course, I hated them all. But I had to pick one. So I chose one that I said, okay, this one's okay. And all of them were about, all of the definitions of, in some way, shape, or form, held this idea of health being a state of feeling well, of well-being. Of course, they were, you know, more in depth than that, but it was about the word a state of being. And I stopped and I was like, this is my biggest issue with these definitions. The homeostatic state, the one where we are constantly moving around neutral, is one of constant motion, of constant change. If the temperature in the room goes up by 1 degree, your body adjusts. If you stand, your blood pressure adjusts. If you sweat, your temperature adjusts. Everything that you do, your body is counteracting all the time by like some sort of magic. And so to me, bounce back ability is a better definition of health. Your ability to be taken from this neutral place where you live all of the time, where things are just floating around and balancing each other out, to being brought outside of that space by some internal or external force, an emotional situation, or, you know, tripping on a sidewalk. I'm famous for tripping over sidewalks. And then being able to come back to that neutral state where things are just naturally balancing themselves out. Your ability to bounce back to being sort of neutral, that's what is healthy. That's what resilience is. I've seen a lot of people over the years say, you know, she was never, ever, ever, ever sick, super, super, super healthy. And then she got cancer, died in 3 weeks. Like there's these really extreme stories, right? Which is, it's terrible. And also, is it really, really good to not get sick for 20 years? What does it say about your immune system if it is not creating immune responses that are necessary when a bacteria comes into your body? I'm not saying that's why somebody got cancer. That's no, crazy. Yeah. That's not the point. But the point is, our bodies are meant to react to things in our internal and external environments. Our ability to react to the things in our internal and external environments and still maintain a state of well-being, that's the true health.
When I listen to you give that example, and I love the term bounce back ability, right? It makes perfect sense listening to you explain that. I think about the mid-career professionals who are dealing with a lot of stress in their life and in their job. We all deal with stress. We know that, but it's how we handle it and we process it. And I imagine, to your point, how we bounce back from it. If we paint an avatar, if you will, of middle manager, raising a family, taking care of aging parents, dealing with a toxic boss, competitive deadlines, having to work extra hours, where is the difference between I'm experiencing stress and I'm experiencing burnout?
So your stress response system, I'm not going to get into the hormonal pathways, but your stress response system does this wild thing where it creates this response, and then part of the response drops down within the first hour, and the second part of the response comes back to you, back to neutral, sometimes within a couple of weeks. So people don't really realize this. There's two major hormones that happen, and one of them really comes back quick, and the other one takes a minute to regulate. The length of time it takes to regulate is dependent on the level of the stressor.
Okay.
So if, for instance, you have an extremely high-level stressor that you are experiencing and reacting to every day, your body never has the time for that to come back up to neutral. When you've done that for months and years at a time, the whole system gets a little bit wonky. So your hormones are supposed to, they have these self-regulating mechanisms. When the body feels like there's enough of them, they stop being released. You know, there's a feedback loop involved. And so this feedback loop stops reacting properly. So the inflammation that your body creates immediately when there's a stressor that typically helps to keep you safe and healthy now is chronic, right? The blood flow that is affecting the structure of your brain that would not really have made that big of a change if you went through the stress and then came back is now chronic. So you don't have enough, your neck is really tight. You don't have enough blood flow to the brain. Your brain structure is shifting. Now it's chronic. So there's a tipping point that happens where your body's ability to bounce back is just overwhelmed. And you said something earlier, it's like your ability to handle it, but it also is, we have to be really honest about the fact that it also is about the amount. And you can't always control the amount. So if you are in the sandwich generation, so you have children and you're caregiving for parents and you are managing in a corporate structure or non-corporate structure, but you're at that level, directorship, et cetera, you don't control whether your kid gets diarrhea and your mom needs to go to the hospital in the same day.
Right.
Right. So it's not only about how well you bounce back and how well you manage your stress. Sometimes there's just literally too much stuff. Mm-hmm. And so when we are stuck in that situation, the first thing that I do with clients is, what can we actually prune here? We do a life pruning. Where are you pouring energy into that you don't actually need to grow? Like, what leaves can we cut off here? Because oftentimes we get stuck in these systems where we are we created a list of things that needed to be due like 12 years ago, and we just never looked at it again. So as we moved up into management, we were still doing jobs that actually now belong to people that work for us. But it's easier and faster if we just do it ourselves. So we keep it, right? And then our mother needed this, 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 and this. And two of those things could have been taken over by some sort of automation. Like, you don't need to go to the grocery store anymore. You can literally order the same exact things at the same exact time every single week. Like, this is not, no. So how many things can we start to shift? Because I don't blame people for not shifting them. You get caught in a tumbleweed.
Yeah.
And then you're just blowing down the highway. And then you're like, oh, I just picked up all of this extra trash and I didn't realize when it happened. That's normal. But when you're in that place of overwhelm, we have to stop and look at the tumbleweed and realize what sticks we can pick out and get rid of.
I appreciate the point that you made about there's responsibilities, but it's easier for me to take care of it. Right. We think about the leaders who are typically high performers, high potentials. They have a ladder, they're climbing it, and they get caught in that superhero syndrome where I can take care of it. And sure, it solves an immediate problem where you check the box and it gets done. But you and I both know that it never does anything to develop a team member, build capacity, create greater engagement. And so that process, to your point about that tumbleweed, just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
And you don't think anything takes you that much time. You're like, it's only 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But if there's 400 things on your schedule that only take 5 minutes, that's 2,000 minutes.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a lot of things, everybody. That's a lot of things. And so we have to stop sometimes. We just have to stop and actually take a look. One of my best-selling keynotes this year is titled Resentment is Your Superpower. And the next is Boundaries Make You More Generous. And people are always like, wait, what? Wait a second. And I'm like, that's the counterintuitive stuff that I love. You know,
yes.
Like this is how I keep things interesting for myself. By overstating, overgiving from your own internal boundaries and taking on these jobs that don't belong to you, you are not being generous. You are being controlling. You are being fearful. When you allow people the space to grow into their own growth, you are being more generous. And sometimes things just have to be totally passed off, right? So if you're an entrepreneur, I know some people, I know you're, that's not the majority of your audience, but when I get a speaking engagement, the first 2 years, anybody that's willing to pay you like $12, you're like, yes, please. And then as things change, you're like, I can't go there for less than. And people are like, really? And you're like, yeah, that's the number. And so there's a shift that happens at some point, right? And when I get calls and somebody says, well, we have a $250 honorarium. Like, I can't do that.
Right.
That's just, it's not affordable for me at this point to do that. But I do know people that are trying to break into the speaking world that would love to do that because they want the exposure, and getting paid even a little bit is fun for them. So by keeping my boundary, not only am I not taking a job that would make me resentful because I'm not getting paid enough, but I'm also creating space for another person to come up. And I'm solving the person who's searching for a speaker, I'm solving their problem for them. So I'm being generous to them as well. Hey, listen, I can't do it, but here's three names that you can look into that I know are available.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful example. And yeah, it makes total sense how those boundaries do allow you to be more generous. And part of the challenge is just giving yourself permission to set those boundaries.
Yes.
Right. I say all the time, when we set ground rules, we know how to play. When we know how to play, there is no question what the rules of the game are, because you've set them and you've agreed upon them with somebody.
Yeah.
in that regard.
Yeah.
Kate, I know in the context of this conversation, we can't get super deep into some of the strategies or solutions that you have for people to address burnout. As I don't even know if I'm saying the right word, if it's address, manage, solve, whatever. I don't know, but I imagine there are people listening that are trying to figure that out too. Like, what is the thing to help me deal with my burnout?
Yeah.
So what tips or strategies would you give someone listening though, who is experiencing a level of burnout, and how they can, to your point earlier, stop the self-neglect and take better care of themselves?
So I think my favorite tip to give people, and something that is fairly easy to implement because everybody knows what it feels like and what it looks like, and we don't always admit to actually having it, but when you don't know what to cut out, when you're not sure what to prune and you don't think anything can be pruned, look toward resentment. Coaches love to talk about gratitude and finding joy. And my favorite emotion is resentment. It guides a large portion of the decisions in my life. This is how I decide when I'm going to raise my prices. It's how I decide who I'm going to work with. It's how I decide how big a scope of a project might be. It's how I decide how often I release my podcast. Mm-hmm. All of those things come to me through resentment. So for instance, I did have a director level client who was taking care of her mother and had a 12-year-old daughter. And she was like, I have to do everything. Nobody. And she's going on and on. And I'm sitting there and I'm saying, yes, 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 I understand you and everyone else I've ever spoken to. I said, okay, but let's go through your resentment journal. Let's try and find some places that we can borrow some of your own energy back so that we can put it someplace that's more beneficial to you. And she said, you know what's really been bothering me? I get out clothes for my daughter every single night and they're ironed and I put them together and I put them on her chair in her room and I'm la, 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 la. And I went, whoa. Mm-hmm. She went, what? I said, your daughter is 12. And she said, yeah. I said, why are you picking out a 12-year-old's clothes? And her shoulders dropped and she sat back into her chair and she thought, I guess I've just always done it. When we dug further into the conversation, it turned out that she had gotten bullied as a kid for her clothing.
Oh.
So she was really nervous about her child being subject to bullies for not being clean, pressed, matching, whatever it happened to be. So she was still protecting herself from 30 years ago, right?
Yeah.
I said, how about you just let your kid wear what she wears? Because that's what she's doing anyway. And if somebody makes a comment, you can help her make adjustments if she needs to. And but in the meantime, you're literally spending a good 8 to 10 minutes every single day picking out and ironing clothes for a child that's then not wearing those clothes. This thing doesn't need to be done. Take it off your list. You know what they started doing together instead?
What?
They started gratitude journaling together instead.
Wow.
5 minutes a day instead of 8. Different focus. Time spent together instead of apart.
Mm. That life pruning exercise seems very powerful.
It is. And your way through it, if you really don't know where to start and you don't think that there's anything, I promise you 10% of the things you do, you could stop doing tomorrow. No one would ever notice. I promise. Because I've been doing this for years and I've talked to thousands of people. I promise you. Look for the resentment, the things that are really just, if you are losing your mind every time you chop an onion, start paying extra for the pre-chopped onions. Like, yeah. Honestly, these things don't seem like a big deal, but if you hate the mug you're drinking coffee out of, please throw it away and replace it. Mm-hmm. Sharpen your stupid knife so that you're not mad at a tomato in the morning. Like, look at even the smallest things. If that's the only thing you can afford to look at energetically and emotionally, that's okay. Start with the small things. If you put a blanket, if you love being in a blanket on your couch at the end of the night, and that blanket is scratchy, and every time you put it on, you're trying to make it sure that it only stays on top of your clothes so that it doesn't touch your skin because you don't like, get a new damn blanket, sister.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Right. So it, you don't always have to start with these big things that you were bullied and you're protecting your kid. It can be the knife you slice your tomatoes with. Sharpen it. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's those little things that yield big results, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, one of the things that Richard and I do, and we do it with a lot of gratitude every 2 weeks, is we have people come to our house and clean.
Yeah.
Right. It's not that we're messy people per se, but you know what? I don't like cleaning a bathroom. I don't like mopping the kitchen floor. It's that other thing. And it was stressing us out when we got this house and everything, which was just, when do you find the time? Cause there's, and we're like, you know what? To your point, we set a boundary and we gratefully pay someone to come in and clean our house. Yes, I know it's a privilege. I get that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's that thing. It's one less thing in our every 2 weeks
yeah.
that we don't have to worry about. And of course, we clean the house before they come anyway. But that's right. But
I do not clean my house before my housekeepers come. They also come every 2 weeks. Yeah. I do not clean before they come. And the only thing that I might have to adjust is that my housekeeper has this thing for putting my mouse back on my desk upside down. She wants the apple to be at the top. So every time she leaves, I touch my mouse and my cursor is going some weird direction. And every single time I have to remind myself to just flip my mouse, you know, but this is, I also understand it is a wonderful privilege to be able to afford to pay someone to mm-hmm. clean your house a couple of times a month. And if you have it, use it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your privilege isn't useful if you're not using it.
Right. Yeah. This whole conversation has woven itself around ultimately finding ways to take better care of yourself so you can take better care of those you love or you 100%. Care about. And some of the big takeaways here around leaning into the resentment and understanding the root cause of that and using that as a solution to solve a particular problem or remedy a certain situation, even just to take a step toward that remedy in that regard. And the thing that you said at the top of the podcast about, you know, self-neglect, where we lose ourselves in the process. We know, you and I know at the bottom of our hearts that when we talk about mid-career professionals, they are hardworking, they are driven, that the people we work with are heart-centered leaders and professionals who care very deeply about everything it is that they do. And it makes sense that behaviors and patterns surface where burnout can creep in. And that can impact the quality of their life, the quality of the work, the quality of their relationships. So I want to thank you for bringing this conversation today and giving us just a sample of the magnificence and the excellence that you are as the expert in this field to bring to this conversation today. But as we wrap up, the question I love asking everybody is, what advice would you have for someone who's listening to help them build their mid-career GPS?
I'm going to go back and repeat the same thing because, number one, I think that every podcast episode should leave you with at least one thing that you can take with you. So I'm not going to give you extra things. If you are at that point, look around you. What things are you resentful about? What people are popping up in your inbox that as soon as their name pops up, you roll your eyes and you sigh? Find out what's going on there. Because the things that are really irritating you, the things that you have resentment about, once you clear those out, you'll know what path you want moving forward, because you will find out exactly what path you don't want. Sometimes starting with what you don't want is much, much easier than trying to create a desire out of, I'm supposed to want this because it says so on the paper. This is the way the arrow goes. So really look around, take good stock, look at the people that you're resentful toward, look at the situations that you're resentful about, pick them apart so that you know what direction you want your arrow to be pointing in.
Thank you so much for that. Kate Donovan, if people want to learn more about you, find you, connect with you, listen to your podcast, the mic is yours, my friend. Please share us all the good things where people can find you.
The very best place to find me is Fried the Burnout Podcast. You can friedtheburnoutpodcast.com. You can find it on any podcast listener on the planet. I'm pretty sure I have joined them all. And if there is somebody who is looking for a speaker, they will find all of that information on my personal website, which is Kate, C-A-I-T, Donovan, D-O-N-O-V-A-N.com.
I will make sure all of that is in the show notes. Kate Donovan, thank you for being such a phenomenal guest on the Mid-Career GPS podcast. I look forward to having you back someday so we can continue the conversation.
Can't wait. Thanks for having me.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for taking time to listen to my conversation with Kate Donovan today. Please make sure to check the show notes for information on how to connect with her. And my friends, remember this. We build our Mid-Career GPS 1 mile or 1 step at a time, and how we show up matters. Make it a great rest of your day. If you enjoyed today's show and don't want to miss an episode, follow on Apple Podcasts or wherever you usually listen. And I'd appreciate it if you would leave a rating and review. Visit johnnarrell.com to download your free copy of the 55-minute Career Transition Jumpstart to help you start building your mid-career GPS. And don't forget to connect with me on LinkedIn and follow me on social @JohnNarrell Coaching. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.